Get ready to take off with Dynamic Golf. All right, welcome back, Dynamic Golf podcast listeners. I am your co-host, Tim McElvanna, and with me today is my partner, as always, Sean Klotz. Sean, how are we doing today, partner?
Oh, we got a beautiful New England morning here, T-Mac. It's around 40 degrees, and we got some snow from last night. I think we're going to get some of those pictures up on our website and kind of on the YouTube area and stuff. So it's just, you know, you got to remember where you're at.
And, yeah.
Hopefully we're going to see some... see some green grass here in about 2 or 3 months, but right now we are what we are, so we gotta kind of figure out different ways to keep our game going and keep our swing moving, and we do what we gotta do. So
well, I think it's very interesting that you're, you know, when people see the pictures here, that you're going to go out and hit some golf balls today, and you know, 44 degrees and bright and sunny is pretty nice day up there in Boston right now, isn't it?
Well, you know, again, you can't just stay dormant, right, T-Mac? You don't get better by sitting on the couch.
Correct.
So you got to keep going. You got to keep working at it. And it's been, what has it been, about 2 weeks since I hit a ball, because I was down in Florida 2 weeks ago. But it just, if you love the game like we do, and if you are have the time like I do currently, you got the two little ones there. But you're not as able to just, you know, jump out and go hit balls. But, you know, it's a day off, and I did just come from the gym, like, because, you know, you kind of work on your core stuff and flexibility at the gym, but you gotta hit balls. So you gotta practice. Did you happen to watch any of the AT&T yesterday?
Yeah, watched a lot of the AT&T. Roy really surmised it with that eagle on, what was it, number 13 or 14 or something like that. It was pretty well over after that.
You mean the driver 7-iron on a par 5? You mean that shot?
Yeah. Like, that's a whole, especially at that course, you know what I mean?
Just, and I played there before too, and that's, that route there, that line that he took on his drive on 14, you don't do that. That's not, like, those houses are in play. They don't, you don't just go over the houses.
Yeah.
Or at least normal people don't.
Human.
So, yeah, and he said, yeah, exactly. But I thought some of the commentary was interesting about how they said that he's come up maybe 18. He played 18 great too, right? Tell the listeners how he played 18.
I played it beautifully, you know, right down the middle and onto the green and just, you know.
But iron off the tee.
Yes, iron off the tee, you know, playing conservative golf, making sure that, you know, he keeps it in the fairway like we kind of tell some of our students, right?
Yeah. He hits iron. He hits, I think he hits maybe 8-iron for second shot, 7-iron way up to about 100, 110. He hits a 15 wedge on the green, and then he 2-putts, and there you go. Like, we've talked about that so many times in our world.
And that's such a daunting hole too. You know what I mean? You've got all that water to the left of you.
Yep.
For a guy who draws the ball, that's got to be kind of intimidating, and then to have the mental... Yeah. Acuity to just take an iron off there and do that is pretty stout stuff.
And he said it at the interview. He said, he's like, you know, if I had a 2-shot lead, I might hit driver, but I had a 3-shot lead, so I figured I might as well just play smart and just hit three quality shots and, you know, and kind of bring it in. But the thing I was trying to get to was the commentators were talking about that during the off season. He hit balls into a simulator for 3 months.
Okay.
Because, this is really funny, he didn't like the shape of his swing. He wanted to kind of work on his motion. And the best way for him to be able to do that was indoors, seeing the video. And he's Rory flipping McIlroy. Like, he's not...
Right?
He's not Tim McElvanna. He's not Sean Klotz. He's not, you know, Dynamic Golf Listener at number 400. He's Rory McIlroy. And he's... changing his swing in the off season in a simulator, trying to get better.
What was it, you know, when he talked about it, was it something to do with why his ball, his, like, you know, wedges and stuff like that go left all the time? Was that kind of what his dynamic was?
So they didn't, it was more the commentator who brought it up. It wasn't Rory.
Okay.
But basically the commentator, I don't know if it was Azinger's, you know, CBS, so it was Jim Nance or whoever, but it was one of those guys who was talking about he just felt like his swing would break down under some pressure situations last year, And another interesting comment that he did make is that he wants to be, he's kind of patterning himself in 2025 after Scottie Scheffler, which again, I think is like a really smart, intelligent way to
Yeah.
see what the competition is doing.
Correct.
And his main point was like, he just doesn't want to make bogeys. He doesn't mind making, you know, making more pars, but he just doesn't want to make bogeys. And then over the weekend at Pebble Beach, he had one bogey in 36 holes. Yeah, absolutely makes the unbelievable, you know, driver 7 iron, and then even the wedge shot on 15 that he stuck to,
Yeah.
you know, a foot or whatever.
Yep.
That
And he had a hole in one
17,
too on the second day too.
yeah,
So he, you know, I mean, had a pretty good week, right?
that's correct. That's correct. Had the opportunity to play Pebble Beach back in 98, so it's always great being able to kind of watch events where you've played the course. But number 17 is so hard. Like, and they just make it look so easy. They get the pin cut, you know, 12 paces off on the other side of that rough, and it's a narrow, narrow green. It's wide. It's super wide, you know, left to right, but it's narrow front to back. These guys are just, they're just good. They're just
And
obviously.
if I remember right, when you look at the tee, you pretty much just look out towards the ocean, don't you?
Yeah, that's correct.
And that's
Yep.
pretty
Yep.
intimidating in itself.
Yep. Because you, I mean, you could have different wind conditions, which is what they had on Saturday, apparently. I didn't really watch much of Saturday, but
It was
it's,
pretty miserable.
yeah. Yeah. There's, I think, you know, they're just so solid each time. And the differences between the winner and the second place is so minuscule, minimal. But there's, you know, 40 guys within kind of 6 or 8 strokes, and it's all just kind of who makes the putts. You know, maybe Rory literally distances himself from other players because he hits it so far. So it's nice. It's nice to be able to hit. I mean, the 14 on the second shot on 14, the par five, he hits 7 iron from 210. Man, you is 7 wood or something, or you know,
It's my
that's not
five wood, I
as
think, probably, or
right,
maybe a three wood
right.
at that
Yeah, uphill. By the way, it's like. And he's just, and that's what Tiger used to do to the field, right? He could hit the ball so high when he wanted to, and he could just dominate some of the short, not shorter courses, dominate some of the golf courses because he was coming at it from a different angle, you know, how his ball flight was coming in, so.
Well, I think it kind of goes back to, you know, I've been listening to some of our old podcasts, but it kind of goes back to that conversation what we had with Sean Van Patten about the strokes gained, right? You know, how each one of these players are looking for just that minuscule of improvement to get better. And it
So true.
really is, you know, I think a lot of those guys are going to that, you know, science and stuff like that now.
Yeah, so true. So, you know, for our listeners today, we're going to kind of tackle this weight shift, pressure, angle of attack, low point, sort of divot, note, you know, to divot or not to divot type of conversation. And I think if you kind of put in some of the stuff that we're going to talk about, not all of it, this is going to be one of those episodes, T-Mac, I think people should listen to multiple times because they're going to get a lot, and we don't want them to try to do everything in one swing.
Correct.
You know, take part of it and go work at it for 2 weeks, and then come back and listen to it again and put the next part of it into play. So, yeah, I think what's your, I mean, just you personally making a golf swing, sort of, I guess maybe explain to the listeners. You know, we've talked about this a little before in the past, but let's really just go with, okay, what's the difference between hitting an 8 iron versus a driver? Like, what are you thinking about when you're trying to make your golf swing in with those two different golf clubs, as far as, you know, pressure and weight and shift and all that type of stuff?
So for me and what I'm trying to do, at least with my irons, is so I'm trying to hit down on them. I want to feel
Okay.
like, for me personally, I want to feel like my lead shoulder is going towards the ground in my downswing. I want to feel that angle of attack down. And
Okay.
then in results with the driver per se, I really want to feel like my left shoulder or my shoulders are moving what you would call a positive, right? Moving up.
Okay. Yep.
And those are my two big swing thoughts for that. And, you know, right or wrong, I think that's the right way to start, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great point. It's the if you get anything from this podcast, the two clubs are swung in a different plane, they're swung downward versus upwards. Your body's working differently. So for me, I'm a little more lower body oriented than upper body. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to feel it in my feet and how the movement works from my back foot into my front foot on an iron, and that's early in the downswing, like arguably before the downswing even starts. I'm already trying to shift. I'm going to keep using the word pressure. I'm trying to shift the pressure from my right foot into my left foot with an iron. And it really is almost every iron, even up to hybrid. So we're talking, 8 iron versus driver. So we'll keep it that simple. But when you get to longer clubs, you start kind of doing it less, for lack of a better term. But then I think I brought this up last time on our podcast there about the PGA show, but that pressure shift, and I am terrible at this part with the driver. If you got something from this, what I learned from the PGA show was at impact with a driver, the pros have around 10 to 15% of their weight on their left foot at impact, front foot. And that means 85% of the weight is on the right foot. And then, just like you said, with an iron, we are completely the opposite, inverse, 85 on the left, 15% on the right, and sometimes even more on the left as we get to a pitching wedge or we're hitting something,
Correct.
downward into it. So I think that's the big picture stuff for our listeners to really grasp. And now how you do that is probably a little bit up to you. Go try it, go figure it out, go hit balls, hit some. I'm going to hit some really bad golf shots today because I'm going to work on driver a lot. And I'm not going to transfer the weight correctly because I'm always kind of the downward attack angle with everything.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think that's the main point, is to get to realize that it's different, because it's just amazing when you teach people, and we teach people every day, like their concepts are. They kind of have a general idea of it, but or they don't. They just think every club is supposed to be swung the same way, because sometimes that's the conversation that the husband tells the wife, or that the grandfather tells the grandson, or whatever,
Absolutely.
so.
You know, and I think it's good to bring up that you brought a little video back from the PGA show and some of the technology that we're using and that the industry's using to measure those things is something called ball on, I think. It's like a shoe insole or something like that. Which I think is a great technology. I'll have to do a little bit more research and see just how accurate it is. But it really does open up the door for instructors like myself and you to really show your students where pressure and weight go and have a measurable, a visible measurement for people. So I think that's really important too when you start looking into, when you start to explain these things, you try to get people a feel for it, of course. But I think if you can have, it's a new science, and I think if you can give them a visual to see, this is where it's at and this is where it's at, they have a greater understanding. And I will say that even talking to some instructors, showing that video, they're still like they don't believe it. So it really is, because
So true.
I put it in the professional thing, a professional app on Facebook, and I got a lot of people, no, that's not true, that's not true. And I'm like, guys, the data shows this. And even if I look at Swing Catalyst, it shows the data for this. So it's tough to believe that, but we're that's the great thing about the new science that's coming to the golf industry. So
So it's funny. I've been reading and studying golf since I was, 15 or whatever. I definitely remember there being a book that I've gotten. I think it's Ben Crenshaw was kind of it's a Ben Crenshaw book. For our listeners of, younger than 40, go look up Ben Crenshaw, Masters winner, best putter, arguably ever type of thing.
Correct.
Never a super long ball striker, but he was kind of a student of Harvey Penick. And again, if you don't know who that is, you need to go do your research too.
Correct. There's a great instructor right there.
Texas kid. Anyway, so he his book was, which I thought was still fascinating, is he's got his information on the left hand side of, hey, how to initiate the downswing. And then on the right hand side, it's Byron Nelson's information from 1955.
Oh, wow.
And all Byron Nelson did was win 11 tournaments in a row, and he's pretty good too in the world of golf. So, But the thing that caught me on the driver's side on this picture was that Byron Nelson would he his statement was, when I hit driver accurately, accurately, and the best distance that I hit driver, it's when I've got my head in line with my right knee at impact of the driver. So your head has to stay significantly back with your driver, if you really think about where the your right knee is at impact with the driver, so you're way back. And that's kind of the thing, is like, those guys didn't have TrackMan. Hogan didn't have all that stuff, and Bobby Jones and Byron Nelson and Sam Snead, but they got it. They got it. So they kind of understood the laws of physics. Those haven't changed in 300 years, or whatever, 1,000 years.
And I think you bring up a really good point for a lot of our listeners, is that it typically when I see people hitting the driver or struggling with the driver, their head is moving, in front of the ball, right?
I gotta get my weight to my left side, Tim. Tim, I gotta get my weight to my left side. I gotta finish. I gotta make this pretty finish. How do I get that finish? Right? And that's when I show my students the video I gave you and stuff there from Balon. They're like, "Well, how do I finish?" I said, "I don't care how you finish. I care what you're doing at impact. You could be ugly when you finish, because some of these guys, especially long drive guys, they don't finish pretty. They're not a fit. They're not. It's not a finish pretty sport anymore. It's a hit it as hard as we can and get it up in the air and launch it."
Well, there's nothing pretty about Scottie Scheffler's swing, right? But he's just winning tournaments.
I mean, I don't know about that, but
Well, I mean, it's a much more
it's
artist move. He's got his feet
yeah.
moving. There's
He's not
stuff.
Adam Scott. He's not right,
Correct,
right.
correct. It's not
He's not Ernie
textbook.
Els. I got you. I got you.
It's not something you're like, hey, I want to, totally copy that. But
You wouldn't teach it.
no. But
You're
you definitely, if your
right.
student had it, you'd have them keep it, right?
It's that's a good. I mean, side note, but like, Scottie Scheffler has got such width in his golf swing. I don't want to get into wide, narrow, wide today, but he's got such width in his motion, and I think that's a good takeaway for some of our listeners. Again, go, because people get narrow and whatever. Let's keep it to what we're talking about. But he's his but obviously his footwork, feet work, it's not fundamental to what you would see from what, again, Rory looks beautiful. It looks that whole thing looks musical,
Well, you've got a
rhythmic,
lot of people copying his
right?
swing. I mean, you've got the lady on the LPGA that won, what, 2, 3 years ago, that's got the exact same swing as his. You've got Tiger telling Charlie to copy Rory's swing, and
Try
yet
it,
he's at TrackManor and inside a studio trying to change it. So, yeah, it's a
Oh, so
baffling
funny,
game, isn't it?
so funny. Yeah, it is. So let's talk about pressure and versus weight shift, because again, that's something that, we were, we're very similar ages. We kind of were kind of brought up in the sport similarly. Like, it was always a weight shift thing. Like, get your weight to your right side, get your weight to your backside, right? And then on your downswing, well, get your weight left as quick as you can. I never really heard pressure. I didn't until probably about I know when I heard it. It was roughly about 17 years ago at PGA teaching the PGA sorry, in Port St. Lucie. Rick Martino was giving me a lesson. He was the director of PGA instruction for the whole PGA, just an amazing teacher. Had the luxury of being able to go down there for a lesson, because Doc Whalen got me a 2-hour package with him. But it
Great.
was just, and this is 17 years ago, and he had is the first time I saw the force plates. That's the first time I saw that in person, and I got it. I'm like, oh my gosh, we've been trying to tell people to hit off of a downhill lie for 10 years. This makes it much more understandable. But so yeah, again, kind of with your students, and sort of how do you initiate the backswing, how do you initiate the downswing, kind of what are you telling people about the difference between that pressure move versus, like, weight shift?
Yeah, so I mean, for my students, I really when they get up to the top of the golf swing and something that's kind of resonated, just hanging around you and Sean, Van Patten, really getting that feeling of when I get up to the top, I want to feel like, and this is something Sean would drill into my head all the time, is I want to feel like I'm squashing on a grape before I start that downswing with my left foot. So I really want to feel like I'm pressing down hard. On that thing to get that, what we used to say in the old days, or old instructors say, just shift your weight, right? Just shift your weight to the left. And now we're getting new terminology where it's really put the pressure into the ground on the left foot to initiate that start. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. There's, again, if listeners want to go kind of do some YouTube research, there's a guy named Danny Mod that does a good video on. I think the, again, big picture stuff for the listeners, it's if you're in posture and you're getting ready to make your golf swing, the movement is on the, as you go back, that right hip goes backwards, and the left, the pressure goes into your left foot initially on the takeaway. Like you're gonna press off the ground with the right leg because you're trying to get your right hip kind of tall. Now again, I'm gonna back up here a little bit. When I start my golf swing, the first half of it from address to hip high, where my hands are hip high, I've definitely moved the pressure from my left foot to my right foot. I need to make that clear. I haven't moved outside the box. The box being, kind of like in between your where your right leg and left leg is.
So you haven't moved your weight, but you've moved your pressure.
And you can do that. And that's, when we talk about go listen to this one five times, I need you guys to get that. That's such a, it's not a small difference. It's a big difference in how you start making a golf swing, because weight shift is moving your entire chest mass, center of your body, like your buttons on your shirt. That's moving that to the right. If you literally just move that to the right, trying to get your buttons on your shirt to your right shoulder, that's weight shift. That's not great. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to move pressure initially into your right foot, and then that feeling of that right hip going backwards and getting tall goes exactly to your point, T-Mac. If I can get at that, at the top of my backswing, if I can get that right hip tall and on the right leg, certainly never dead straight, but straighter than it was at the beginning,
Correct.
still some bend, that sets me up for what you talked about, was okay, well, now I can work downhill into the golf ball, and now I can go the other way, which is move the pressure back into my left foot early in the downswing, if not
Correct.
arguably prior to the top of the backswing, and I'm ready. And then, funny, I was watching one another YouTube video yesterday with one of my clients, and the guy on YouTube, he's like, okay, once you get there, it was a analysis of Adam Scott's swing, and he's like, once you get there, once you've started the downswing and you get the weight, the pressure back into your left side, golf's pretty easy. And I'm like, well, I don't know about all that for average people, but yeah,
Well,
it
it
should be
definitely
like, get out of the
simplifies
way of
things,
it.
right?
It should be like, get out of the way, like stop thinking at that point. You can't fix it, go.
Yeah, momentum's
So
the train's left the station
there
at
you go.
that point. It is
That's,
going. Just ride with it at that
yep.
point, right?
Yep. That's the term, momentum. I love it. Yeah. Why would you want to stop the action, the momentum? Let it develop. Let it be intentional with it, and be, let's go. Let's be really intentional, ball after ball, divot. Yeah, there we go. Now we're starting the next topic, divot. Ball first, divot after, all those things come as a result of doing the first part well.
Correct. Correct.
Yep.
So for my students, what I kind of do to get them the feeling of that start, that pressure and stuff like that, is what I do is I get down on the ground and I hold their golf club and then I'd say, go ahead and start your swing. And you'll notice that
Okay.
they're not going to move their weight. They're going to start trying to use their hands and their pressure, and they start to feel where that pressure goes into the ground. Now, if they start to slide and move, then we know that they're doing it incorrectly. But if I hold that club and have them start, try to initiate that start, they start to feel that their hands and their pressure starts to go down into that leg, and they start to feel that their hands and chest start to move as one unit.
So you hold their club at address, is that what you're saying? I'm trying to I'm learning today too. Good.
So I will hold it at address when they're at address, and then I will just have them say, okay, try to start your swing, and they will really start to feel that they have to kind of move these things in a certain way without, because they can't really shift at that point. They have to kind of move some different stuff. So once I
Okay.
kind of hold that club there a little bit and they kind of start that, you can start to see the remnants of the right hip starting to go back a little bit and not to the side.
So hold the club head itself or the shaft?
No, the club head itself, just kind of get
Club
down
head
on your
itself.
knees and just hold the club a little
Gotcha.
bit and then just say, hey,
Okay.
move the club just a little bit, and they will start to get a
Yep.
sense of where that pressure is. And if they start to shift, you're like, hey, and then they will start to get the feeling of getting that hip back behind them and getting that weight shift back in that right heel.
So does that help them feel, because so many people pick the club head up early, right? They just use their hands to pick the club head up. Does that help them at all? Basically get that feeling of kind of like I always talk about, like left shoulder starts the club back, like your big muscle.
Absolutely. Because if I hold that thing, I can't really use my hands to move it away. I'm going to have to engage bigger muscles to get that to kind of move. So absolutely. It gets that left shoulder to move. It gets everything to kind of move in one unit instead of, as you said, the hands just flipping to the inside. And then you're going to get a lift and then no pressure, right?
No, it's all upper body. Mm-hmm. There's no lower body engaged. It's just pick your hands up and, hey, how come I'm not hitting it as far as I want? Well, you're not utilizing, you know, all your body type of stuff. So that's good. That's a good one. I don't think I've really kind of heard that one or seen that one. So that's good.
Yeah, it good starts at the beginning, right? I mean, if we can get it at the beginning part, right, then it can go throughout. But once you start to kind of get that lift, right, or that slide, then there's no pressure in those feet, right?
Yeah, one of our buddies there, Sean Van Patten, taught, you know, mostly by Tim Poltz, great teacher down there in the Zephyr Hills area. His takeaway was always the grip move first before the club head did.
Mm-hmm.
That was always a, you know, odd looking to us because we're so used to kind of having everything uniform. But his grip definitely moved, you know, maybe an inch to the right before his club head started doing. So his hands started moving laterally to the right, and that really engaged kind of the shoulder takeaway, and then it just got him set up to be, you know, again, kind of more big picture muscles, big muscles instead of kind of small twitch muscles.
Yeah. So he kind of drags the club back or drags his hands back before the club moves. And that's the person that kind of showed me that drill, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good stuff. Good stuff. Are you a divot guy? Do you care about the divot? Let's just talk about depth. Not really where it's going side to side. That might be a different one for kind of club path and stuff, but do you take a divot? Do you take more of a divot with a wedge than you do with a 7-iron, or how does it change as you go throughout the clubs maybe?
Well, I can say this. I do take a divot. I like to take a divot. I know that when I compress the ball, I've got a nice divot ahead of the ball. And I can tell when I don't hit it, that divot starts probably just 1/10 of an inch behind it, and it's not the best results. So I definitely want to have a divot. Yeah. I want to have it ahead of the ball. I probably don't have the longest divot as most people, but if I can hit it with a downward blow with an iron, it's definitely compressed.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the driver is what? What's the thought process there with driver with in respect to, I'm going to use the word low point, like where the low point of your swing is, because that's what we're talking about. When you have a divot, there's a low point that is either, like you just said, either slightly behind the golf ball. I use the word equator. Equator is like right at the golf ball. You've kind of picked it perfectly clean. There's no divot at all.
Yeah.
Or there's a ball first and you start seeing a, you know, some type of length after that swing of divot. So with driver, are you trying to do the same thing with the low point and the attack angle?
No. So I'm trying to do something completely different with my low point on that. I want my low point to be before the ball. Typically what I do is I'll put a sleeve box of balls behind right next to where my golf ball is. And that's where I put my club head behind the ball. And that's where I want to imagine my low point to be. And then after that, I want to feel like I'm swinging up to the gods.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, left shoulder going high and swinging up to the gods.
Yeah, I know you've done this one before. I'll do it here later on this afternoon. But the head cover drill in front of the ball, you know, really kind of making sure that you elevate the golf ball. Club works up. Put the you know, start it a foot out in front of it.
Yeah.
Start it 2 feet out in front of it. I don't care. But get the concept of working upwards with the driver with your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the weight's got to be more on your right leg that impact than it would be on the left leg.
Yeah.
You're not looking for any type of divot before. You're trying to bottom out the swing roughly 2 to 3 inches behind the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Depends a little bit on swing speed and what you're doing. And I think if you kind of like went with that concept of I'm trying to bottom out 2 to 3 inches prior to the golf ball, you might get to 1 inch. You know, it's one of those exaggeration feels.
Correct. Feel versus real.
But yeah. But at least you were on the right track and you weren't working downwards. And then the key for the driver, and again, this is a, we don't have 6 hours. We want to keep our audience coming back. So you also have to maintain the loft of the club as it goes through impact. You can't with driver. You can't. You're not trying to add loft. You're trying to add angle.
Yes, angle of
Yep.
attack.
So the hands do have to stay in front of the club head, even though you are working on an upward attack angle, and that will help you drive through the golf ball. You'll keep just think of it. I think that to me the easiest way, it's not easy, but the easiest way is to think of it. You've got a 10-degree object, and when it makes impact with that golf ball, you still want to have, in general, you want to kind of have a feel of 10 degrees of impact at the golf ball. But when you add in the fact that you've swung 2 inches behind the ball, you're actually making impact with roughly 12 to 14 degrees of kind of the loft of the club has changed a little bit because your shoulders have changed, not because you've flipped your right hand, added your right hand, whatever. You're not trying to add loft. I think that's really when people try to switch to driver and switch to swinging up on it. This is where they get in trouble. They try to start swinging up on it and using their release of their hands, and they just hit high. They hit it shorter, and they're like, "Ah, this doesn't work. Let me go back to my other way." Well, great.
Could you kind of touch on, now let me ask you this. Could you touch on, we want to hit up on it, but could you explain to some of the listeners what that does and why we want to do it and what that does to our spin rate? I think that's pretty important for people to understand with the driver. Can you kind of explain that a little bit for us?
100%. And again, Byron Nelson, 1955, he got it. Ben Hogan got it. Like, they understood it. They just didn't have the data analytics part of it behind them. They saw the ball go out and roll forward when they did one type of kind of delivery, and then when they saw the ball go up and land 5 feet from there where the ball, it doesn't get a roll, which is a lot of our listeners, because they'll maybe hit a little cut or a fade or slice or whatever. And yeah, you just kind of hit that like high spinny shot that just kind of hits and stops on the ground. So these guys got it, 60, 70 years ago. Now with TrackMan, Foresight, FlightScope, I don't care. You can fit, data wise, show the person, hey, and it to me, it is this simple, and it's not simple, but it is this simple. As far as understanding the concept, it's simple. Delivery is a different thing. I'm hitting a sand wedge from 70 yards. My full swing sand wedge is goes 75 yards currently, whatever. So that means I move the ball position back in my stance, probably one ball further right of middle. That enhances my downward attack angle. That means I hit down into it. That means I take my 56-degree wedge and I deliver it probably with around 48 degrees of loft, because my handle's in front of the club, my weight's shifted, I've never really gotten to my right side. All that stuff has happened, which makes I hit down into the ball spins up the face of the club, and that's what is starting to cause the backspin to make the ball go up in the air, land on the green, and depending on how good, bad, different your conditions are and kind of your speed is, you might actually see the ball, hopefully at least just hit the green and stop, or tour level, you'll see the ball kind of hit the green and kind of spin back, and that's a sand wedge. So driver, complete opposite. I don't want to have any of that concept. I want to hit the ball on the with the correct loft, 12 to 14 degrees aloft as I come through it. I want to have this kind of attack angle where I'm working upwards into it. So basically, you would reduce the spin on the shot. So, the more that I hit down into it, the more it's going to spin. The less I hit down into it, the more I hit up on it, I'm going to reduce the amount of spin. And it
That's
can
big.
be, yeah.
That's big.
Yeah,
I think a
it's.
lot of our viewers need to understand that concept on its own, right? If I want to have spin, I hit down. If I want to have less spin, I hit up.
Up. Yep.
Right?
And yeah, draws don't go further than fades in the air, which is the common misperception. But draws go further than fades on the ground because the ball is got top spin and right to left spin. So it's top spin coming out of the where it's coming off of, the ball, the club. So it's in the air 200 yards, and then it's got forward momentum as it hits the ground and goes forward and goes left, Oh, I hit the ball 260 or 245.
Yeah.
Well, great. You carried it 220, but that's okay. We don't
Exactly.
care how far we carry driver. Typically, we care about where it ends up. So if you hit a 220 yard fade, it's probably going to go 224 yards when it gets done. If you hit a 220 yard draw with some right to left motion to it, you're probably going to end up going 240, 245. So that's why, if you're trying to get more distance, if you're working on, hey, I'm getting a little older, I'm not hitting as far as I want to, then maybe there's some characteristics to delivering the club again, sort of with a little less loft,
Yeah.
but still working upwards. So because you're trying to again, draws have less spin than fades. Period.
Correct.
That's why tour players like to hit fades into greens. And they're long enough, they don't really care about what they do with the
Yeah.
driver anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I
They
mean
just want to hit straight.
it's amazing. So with our listeners, with the driver, what is, when they get into the simulator or whatever it may be, or their little TrackMans at home or Raspotos or whatever, what's the spin rate that they're typically, a tour player and an average player, what are they kind of looking for with a spin rate with the driver so they get some kind of understanding where they're at?
So I feel like when we do this, we're talking to, maybe 5% of the population, maybe 10% of the population. But to answer the question, I would say in general, depending on speed of how fast you're swinging the golf club,
Yeah.
you're looking for somewhere between 2400 and 3200 RPMs.
Great.
And the basically, it's very, very, not the golf ball doesn't care. So if you're swinging something at 120 miles an hour, your spin rate should be closer to that 2400, maybe even lower. I mean, there's definitely, as you watch TV and you watch the ball speed numbers and kind of the stuff that Rory's doing and all these guys on tour, they might be going, Colin Morikawa might be going for 22,000 or 2100 because he wants to see a lower ball flight. He doesn't care
Yeah.
about the height, he wants to see it. But saying that, and then so then just to finish that point, then the guy lady who's swinging at driver at 90 miles an hour or less, they can't do it at 2400 RPMs because it would just never get in the air.
Correct.
You got to have some kind of, you got to get the ball lifted,
Yeah.
so you have to have some spin rate. So that's why forever, or not forever, for the last 20 years, the companies realized, okay, well then the senior guy, the lady, they probably need a 12 or a 14 degree
Yeah.
driver instead of a 7, 8, 9 degree driver. That's all
Correct.
it is, right?
And that's to get into that angle that we're talking about, right? Of hitting it up, and it as we age, it's tougher to get our body in those positions. So I think that's great is that some of our listeners need to kind of swallow a little pride and probably go to a little bit higher lofted, and I think I'm close to getting there myself, so
No, it's I mean, again, going back kind of like almost college, a little out of college, high school, not high school, but kind of the college to the maybe the 1990 to like 2000, 2005. There was the driver for the long drive guys, and even some of the players on tour, John Daly, would be 4, 5, 8 degrees, right? If you were a good player back in 1995, you would be hitting a 7.5 or an 8 degree driver.
Yeah.
But that's because you had the speed to deliver it with. You could make the speed of the club. Now, I don't believe I haven't. I think I'm accurate with this statement. I feel like the loft on the clubs for the average tour player has gone up to probably somewhere in between that 9 to almost 10 degree, type of thing. And then you get to a senior tour player, and they're probably 10 to 10, maybe to 11 degrees,
Yeah.
because they've kind of max, or they've figured out that, okay, I do want the ball to go up in the air, but then when it comes off the, from that apex, I need it to go forward, or some type of, and that's what we see, think US Open, think some of those golf courses that are set up like runways
Yeah.
where they're hitting 375 yard drives, like Bryson, those types of guys. They're not carrying at 375. They're still carrying at 325, but the fairways are mowed at, 10 or
Well,
whatever.
faster than your pro course
Green
in your
speed.
town, right?
Green speed. And that's why it comes off. And you can see, and they, Augusta is probably a really, really good example because people know that golf course. They know some of the looks. That's why number 10, that's such a, it's a 470 yard par four, and they're hitting 3 wood off the tee because they want to get it into the slot, into that little where the hill goes, and they want it to roll forward. They're trying to carry it 260, but it's going to end up going 320 after the roll. So
They're
yeah,
getting that speed slot, right? That little speed slot to get down there.
It's just so you know, big picture stuff. Get your pressure correct. Move your pressure correct. Think about it in your golf swing. Start thinking about it. Go look up your YouTube stuff. Go. There's a ton of videos on all this stuff. We should start posting some more. I definitely will. I know I'm a slacker, but I think the more that we, you know, that and if you got questions, same thing I'll be talking about. If you got questions, let us know. You know, chat with us. Let us know. We want to. We don't want to just tell you what we're thinking. We want some to answer your questions too. So.
And if you guys have any suggestions for future episodes, please let us know. All obviously. But we just don't want to sit up here and just talk to ourselves. We want to engage with our listeners and listen to their comments and see what they have to say. Absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff.
I thought you brought up a really good point with the golf ball and the spin rate a little bit. How the technology with, like John Daly having that older club with the 8 iron, 8 degree stuff. And I just think it's interesting now with TrackMan and all that these guys have gone to these higher lofted clubs, like you said, and they're just maximizing everything. I mean, it's just a whole new frontier. It's, they'll take a 10.5 degree driver where, what, probably 20 years ago, you wouldn't find a pro caught dead with one of those, right?
No,
So they're just
absolutely.
maximizing everything and just revolutionizing the game with everything.
I think I'm right with this stat. I'm not 100% sure, but yesterday that drive that Rory hit on number 14, that par five, you know, again, I would literally go look this one up because it was such an amazing shot. I think his apex of his driver was 145 feet in the air when that
Holy.
thing got to the top of it. And that's just, you know, and then, again, the announcer's like, people, I don't think I've even seen that on the stat sheet of the ability to get it that high. Because if we told our listeners to go hit it 145 yards, if me and you go went or 145 feet in the air, we'd hit the ball 210 yards, right? Like it would just be a pop-up.
Yeah, I mean, that's
But
basically 14 stories high. 15 stories. I mean, think about that. I mean, you go find a building that's, probably 7 stories, and I'd be lucky to get over that. And I mean, you got one that's 15. Wow. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing when you put it in that perspective.
And it just shows you what, you know, what they're working on. And so it's all of it. You know, we've given you guys a ton of information, a lot of kind of data. That's why I said at the beginning, I'm like, this is one you want to listen to. You don't want to breeze through this one because there's just a lot of good kind of nuggets to all that. And just to
Absolutely.
realize that, yeah. So work on your, you know, work on your how you start the swing. Like you said, I like your drill there, T-Mac, a lot. I like that feeling of kind of, you know, using your arms and your shoulders to start the swing, but the pressure immediately goes from left to right really, really early in your backswing. And then, you know, we've done this one before a little bit too, but then depending on which teacher, depending on which kind of mode of thought you're listening to, when you get to the halfway point in that backswing, these two moves can happen at the same time. You can lift your arms, you know, finish the shoulder turn, and you can also put that pressure from the right leg back into the left leg at the top of your, like before you get to the top of your backswing. Those two things can happen at the same time. I get a lot of deer in the headlight looks when I show that to people. But it's such a rhythm thing. I really like it to me. I like it to just be a right, I just put the club in my right hand and let the weight of the club as I work up in my backswing be the thing that kind of rocks me back to my left side. So I'm already ready. I'm ready. I'm already at top of my backswing. I'm already left. I'm already left. I can't try to get left from the top of my backswing. I've got to already be in position to get to work the downswing because then it goes to what you said, the Sean Van Patten thing. Okay, well now what do you do? Right, you get it, you get your student up there. Okay, great. What do I do now? Well, now you go, that left foot stamps on the ground, crushes ants, hold the ground with your foot, like that left foot, like it drives into the ground, because when you start the downswing and you get that left foot in the ground, the next part of that downswing is to start crossing off the ground with the left leg and get the left hip to go backwards. So
Yep. Utilizing those
that's a
ground
master class
pressures.
right there, right?
Absolutely. And that's where you generate your power and force from, right? I mean,
Correct.
that's the main key. And I think a lot of people waste a lot of energy on the top part, like you were talking about, arm
All
swing,
arms.
swinging around, and they're leaving probably 90% of their power source behind, aren't they?
Oh, it's go try to hit it. Go try to go, go to the, I mean, well, I don't know if you're going to do this, but go shoot a free throw with your legs straight, just dead straight, and no knee flex, no knee bend. Just go shoot it and see what happens. See if you just can make a free throw with your arms, and good luck.
I bet you don't even make it
That's
to the basket.
nope. You have to use the ground to pressure to push off. So yeah, I think that's just such a simple, good analogy, for people to get. Serving in tennis is a good one too. When you're going to make a serve overhanded, not underhanded, but when you're going to make a serve in tennis, you're going to press off the ground. You're going to throw the ball up, and you're going to start with your knees bent. You're going to throw the ball up. Your legs are going to get straight. Your arms are going to extend, and you're going to hit down into it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You see them press into that ground just before they jump up, and that's the motion that we're talking about right there, is that pressing down just before you're about to jump up, basically.
Volleyball. Go watch college girls volleyball and see them serve. They're jumping off the ground to get to the apex of the ball when they're serving. It's not Sean and Tim's theory. Like this is the deal. This is how you play. This is how you play sports.
It's how athletes move, right?
Yeah.
It's how
Yeah.
athletes
100%.
move. And sometimes we overthink it, as golfers, thinking that we're not very much athletes, but you need to be athletic. You need to kind of move those
Yeah.
legs, and you're going to have a little bit of a squat feeling on that left side, right?
Right. It's funny. Like golf is a sport where you can play it and don't have to be very athletic. Yeah.
Correct.
Very, very much like a, okay, stop that when I say that. But you can make contact, hit the golf ball a certain distance, and kind of get it around. Probably shoot between 100 and 120.
That's fine.
You might be able to chip and putt and shoot 100, but the levels that we're talking about trying to go from 100 to 90, I got to hit it a little further. Great, you got to hit a little straighter too, from 90 to 80. Okay, now I got to hit it more straighter. Maybe I have enough distance, but I got to hit it more straighter. Then 80 to 70 is like, okay, that's a whole different. Now I got to gain 15 yards because I got to play par fives and, three shots and not four shots and all that stuff. That is just so it's a funny sport because so many people can play it, which is why we love it. So all we're trying to do is tell you, hey, we know you're not going to take, go listen to this podcast. We know you're not going to necessarily go to the range and work on it for 2 hours, but start thinking about some of these things when you warm it up in front of the first tee. What was T-Mac talking about? Oh yeah, I got to drag the club back. I got it. What was Sean talking about? Oh yeah, I got to get my pressure back on my left side. Whatever tidbits that you take from this, and you will start seeing. You'll be like, oh my gosh, that they were right. Whatever.
And if you do take it out to the range and something isn't working, send us a question, right? We'd love to give clarification. If you go out to the range and you're working on something, send us a little something or send us a video. We'd love to see what you're working on and doing. We'll shoot you something back and say, hey, you need to clean this up, or this is looking great, pal, and thanks for the support. That's what we're
That's
here
it.
for.
That's it. Exactly. It's
So,
tough.
well, I want to thank all of our listeners today. I think that was a great subject today, Sean. Learned about the attack angle, low point, pressure points, spin rate, and all that good stuff. So, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we break for today?
Honestly, I think we covered a lot. I think we covered a lot. I think you should try to take this in pieces. Don't try to do all of it. Go work on pressure shift first, and then maybe work on attack angle next, and then work on kind of low point next, and then from there kind of figure out how to follow through and finish. But yeah, just it's supposed to be a fun game.
Yeah,
Enjoy it.
absolutely, absolutely. So, want to thank you all our listeners for listening today. If you found this podcast useful or helpful, please think about liking or subscribing. It really does help the channel. And without further ado, thank you guys. Have a good one.